Honor. May it please the court, Phil Perry for appellant. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
You'll have to keep track of it yourself because if you use it up, you've used it.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is a federal preemption case related to the federal 340B drug discount program. That program is entirely federal. It's inextricably linked to Medicaid and to Medicare Part B. It's a subsidy program. Drug manufacturers who opt into Medicaid must also offer discounted drugs to certain specified types of healthcare facilities. The federal statute identifies them in detail. There are 15 of them under 340B. Drug companies could choose not to participate in Medicaid or Medicare if the 340B program is misadministered or abused or becomes unduly burdensome. The U.S. Supreme Court has already explained how important the 340B program is and why it has to be controlled by a federal agency at the federal level. And the U.S. Supreme Court has addressed how Congress created a, quote, unitary, unquote, and comprehensive federal administrative and enforcement scheme governing the program. That is necessary. That uniform scheme is necessary so that the federal government could administer both 340B and Medicaid, quote, harmoniously. That's the U.S. Supreme Court. But Arkansas here has decided to try to regulate the 340B and program and its subsidies itself in a three-page statute that mentions the federal program more than 20 times and explicitly attempts to regulate the nature of the subsidy and when the subsidy is delivered. That Arkansas statute also attempts to replace the resolution mechanisms in the federal statute for resolving disputes under the federal program with its own conflicting state regime with penalties and the possibility of a cease and desist order. But Arkansas's new regime is preempted by federal law, both under the doctrine of field preemption and under the doctrine of obstacle or frustration of purpose preemption. Let me...
Counsel, you don't dispute that it's not expressly preempted.
There's no express preemption provision in this part of the statute, the 340B part, which you can find at 42 U.S.C. 256B. So these are both implied preemption arguments, one field, one obstacle. Let me start, if I might, now with ASTRA, which is ASTRA v. Santa Clara. It's the Supreme Court case I mentioned. And it's quite clear. It addressed a somewhat different separate enforcement mechanism that was a third-party beneficiary claim on the federal contract that's used to administer this program, but is in almost all respects on par with this. Like in that case, here, healthcare facilities can appear before an Arkansas agency, Arkansas Insurance Department, to press their claims just like they were pressing their claims in federal court in ASTRA. So the problem that the ASTRA court identified was that there was a competing enforcement mechanism, not part of the federal statute, not part of the comprehensive federal scheme for enforcement or resolution of disputes, but litigated separately. And the Supreme Court said that that separate mechanism was, quote, incompatible with a 340B statutory regime, that spreading the enforcement burden, and this is the Supreme Court referring to what the Department of Justice said in its statement of interest in that case, is, quote, hardly what Congress contemplated. Again, in the Arkansas, under the Arkansas statutes, the same type of plaintiffs can bring a claim before an Arkansas agency as were present in the federal court that ASTRA addressed. And the Supreme Court went on. A separate competing enforcement mechanism, in that case it was the third-party beneficiary theory, is, quote, at odds with Congress's unitary administrative enforcement scheme. Separate mechanisms of enforcement, the Supreme Court explained, quote, would undermine the agency's efforts to administer both Medicaid and 340B harmoniously on a uniform national basis. Now, those quotes I read are the same types of factors that are decisive in other cases involving field and conflict preemption. Let me give a couple examples. Most of these are cited in our brief. Let me start with the Supreme Court. The Arizona case, Arizona v. U.S. It's a case from 2012. It's a case about the immigration laws and a statute Arizona passed. It relies on those same factors that the Astor court did. So while Astor wasn't explicitly a preemption case, its reasoning supports the same conclusion that we had in the Arizona Supreme Court case, that is field and conflict preemption. Another case, Supreme Court, Wisconsin v. Gould, again, in our brief, conflict is imminent whenever separate remedies are brought to bear on the same activity. That's what's happening here. The state of Arkansas has created a mechanism to try to enlarge the federal subsidy and enforce it through a state agency.
Well, let me ask you this. I think it's undisputed, and maybe you dispute it, but I think it's undisputed that the statute doesn't talk about distribution. And that's what this Sonify case from the Third Circuit mentioned, that it really is pretty, it's silent on distribution. So I guess the question becomes, who gets to decide how one of the covered entities distributes their medication? And as I understand it, it's the position of the pharmaceutical industry that you have sole discretion to make that determination. Is that right?
Your Honor, let me wade into the statute at this beginning of your question and answer your question in detail. First of all, the federal statute does deal with distribution. It's in A8. What the federal statute decided not to do, and this is what the court in the Third Circuit opinion addressed, was require what is at the heart of these cases, and that is that when pharmaceutical manufacturers provide these subsidies, these discounted drugs, to healthcare facilities, that they would be required to ship those same or sell those same to those same drugs at that discounted price to every contract pharmacy throughout the United States. Now, here's what the Third Circuit said. It said, yes, the federal statute does deal with distribution. It does so in A8. It's called a prime vendor program. There's also a question addressed in A8 about who bears the cost of those shipments. But what the Third Circuit said was that Congress, in the first act that created the 340B program, decided specifically not to require shipment to contract pharmacies. And they did that in a different section that followed the very section 340B in that original act. It was different. It didn't require discounts as to these specific 15 types of healthcare facilities. It required discounts as to federal beneficiary programs for federal employees. So there, and this is what the Third Circuit said, Congress decided to use this contract pharmacy arrangement specifically in one provision in the statute, but in the very prior provision, they decided not to use it.
So your position is you could prohibit all contract pharmacies?
No, Your Honor. Let me go further into the statute to explain the question, and here's how you answer that question. So there are about three or four really key sections for this particular dispute in the federal statute. One is called A1, all right? That defines the specific obligation the drug manufacturers are under. If they're going to participate in Medicaid and Medicare, they have to offer a discounted drug. Now, we call it the shall offer provision. It relates to a federal contract that the drug manufacturers enter with the government. But the question is, how far does that shall offer provision go? What must be part of your offer? That's what the Third Circuit was addressing. The D.C. District Court addressed that too. The question there, that shall offer provision, is does it require you to ship to one contract pharmacy, two, three, or every contract pharmacy in the United States? And both of those two courts I mentioned said it's not so broad, that shall offer provision, to get to all of the pharmacies in the United States. That is a unique question of federal law under the federal statute, not something for Arkansas to decide. And there are other provisions that are uniquely federal. There is
Your position is up to the manufacturers, though, right?
Up to the manufacturers to be determined by the federal agency under the federal remedial scheme.
Well, but you have policies that are quoted in the Third Circuit opinion that says, like Novo Nordisk, they may use multiple contract pharmacies at Novo Nordisk's discretion.
Well, Your Honor, the federal courts have decided that the federal government had their policies incorrect. The federal policy in place for 14 years was one contract pharmacy and one only. Then they expanded it, and as our brief explains, enormous, like a nine-fold, tenfold increase in the number of these discounts occurred. But let me make this point, if I might. There are criteria in the federal statute for when a covered entity is also eligible. They can't divert. In other words, they might have a contract pharmacy arrangement that constitutes diversion under federal law. They can't do that. That will disqualify them as a covered entity. They can't duplicate discounts under 340B with Medicare rebates. Those are uniquely federal questions to answer. Now, here is the problem with what is going to happen in Arkansas. In our 28J letter about a week ago, we disclosed what we had learned, and that is there are at least 17 claimants appearing before the Arkansas Insurance Department. At this time, Arkansas is apparently going to litigate the question of whether we have statutory penalties or whether we're going to be subject to a cease and desist letter without the ability to understand whether we had actually breached our federal obligation, shall offer, you know, whether those particular policies breach that obligation, question of federal law, or whether these covered entities are actually eligible under federal law as covered entities. Those are uniquely federal questions that must be addressed in the state proceeding. So the federal statute also has a very detailed set of sections on resolutions of disputes. You can find that at, in A4 and A5 and in D. They include informal resolution between the agency and the parties. They include audits. They include all sorts of measures leading up to possible civil monetary penalties for intentional abuse of the system or what's called alternative dispute mechanisms. Every entity involved in this litigation, including the district court, recognized that ADR, alternative dispute resolution under the federal statute, would govern, could govern the contract pharmacy's issues at in front of the court today, including the district court at page 13 and 14, including interveners at page 49 to 50, including the Arkansas Insurance Department at pages 28 through 35. This is something that is uniquely federal, and the issues before the Arkansas Insurance Department cannot be resolved without addressing these federal issues. Back to the Astra case, the Supreme Court case, it said that there was a significant problem with potential inconsistent adjudications. That is exactly what is imminently going to happen in Arkansas. So, Your Honor, I see that I'm now into my rebuttal time.
You may.
Thank you.
Mr. Connolly.
May it please the court, my name is Ronald Connolly, and I'm counsel to the interveners, appellees, Community Health Centers of Arkansas, and Piggott Community Hospitals. I'm going to speak for 8 minutes, and then Mr. Rand from the Arkansas Insurance Department will take the remaining seven. I will address 340B field preemption. Mr. Rand will address conflict preemption and the FDCA. Act 11-3 is not preempted. The preemption analysis begins with the intent of Congress, and the intent of Congress is to provide discounts to healthcare providers so that they can treat more patients and provide more services. And for nearly 30 years, Congress and the federal executive branch have been aware that state laws coexist with 340B and that 340B is silent on drug distribution. The Eli Lilly Court in the Southern District of Indiana held that Congress was aware that covered entities used contract pharmacies when it enacted 340B in 1992. In 1994, the Federal Department of Health and Human Services acknowledged that covered entities use contract pharmacies. In 1996, HHS acknowledged that covered entities use contract pharmacies and established a framework for contract pharmacies. And in 2010, HHS expanded on that framework, and a few weeks later, against this 14-year background of state law contract pharmacy laws, Congress enacted the Affordable Care Act with significant amendments to 340B, adding five different kinds of covered entities. At that time, after this 14-year history of state law operating in the field of contract pharmacy and drug distribution, Congress did not enact an express preemption provision. Contract did not address contract pharmacies or state laws governing distribution at all. The policy of the executive branch is unchanged today. Under the Supreme Court's decision in Wythe v. Levine, there's no preemption where Congress is silent on state law claims coupled with its awareness of those claims, and the agency has traditionally regarded state law as a complementary form of regulation. And indeed, every court to consider the question has held that 340B is silent on drug distribution. The Sanofi court said that the text is silent about delivery. The Lilly court said that 340B statute is silent as to contract pharmacy arrangements and delivery obligations. The Novo Nordisk court said that, as Hearst has long recognized, the statute is silent as to permissible drug distribution systems. Act 1103 does not intrude on the field of 340B because 340B does not govern distribution and does not disturb state laws governing the practice of pharmacy or contract pharmacy arrangements. These are traditional areas of within the state's police powers to regulate the health and safety of their citizens. Indeed, Pharma bears a heavy burden here because courts have long presumed that Congress does not cavalierly preempt laws, state laws, because states are viewed as independent sovereigns in the U.S. federal system. And that presumption holds special force when states and the federal government pursue common purposes. And the historic police powers of states are not superseded by federal law unless Congress expresses a clear and manifest purpose to do so. And in this case, Congress has expressed no such clear and manifest purpose to disturb state laws governing contract pharmacies or intrastate drug distribution.
What is your response, or maybe your co-counsel will be addressing this, to this argument that the Arkansas statute imposes a significant regulatory and adjudicative scheme on top of the federal scheme that may result in inconsistent adjudications?
Well, Mr. Rand will address that, but the short answer is that the 340B federal scheme addresses pricing, and the state law Act 1103 governs distribution. The price is already set at the point at which Act 1103 comes into play. Act 1103 discusses drugs purchased by covered entities, so past tense. At the time that Act 1103 comes into force, the drugs have been purchased at a 340B price. Act 1103 simply says that a manufacturer must deliver those previously priced drugs to the community pharmacy under contract with the healthcare provider, where they can be dispensed to the covered entity's patients. Mr. Perry discussed the Astra case, the Supreme Court's Astra case, and that was a pricing case. That case did not address distribution at all. In Astra, a number of covered entities sued manufacturers, arguing that they were intended beneficiaries of the pricing contract, and they alleged pricing violations, not distribution violations. And the court did discuss the interplay between Medicaid and 340B, but again, it was discussing pricing. It was concerned about the effect of the average manufacturer price, which under 340B, if it goes down, the 340B price goes down, but under Medicaid, if it goes up, Medicaid gets more rebates. Again, pricing. Mr. Perry discussed the section, I believe it's 603 of the Veterans Health Care Act of 1992, which was the act that enacted 340B. And that parallel section, Congress permitted distribution to depot contracts under the Veterans Health Care Administration. The key difference there is that the Veterans Administration has always used depot contracting systems. So Congress was simply acknowledging the different distribution mechanisms that were already in place for veterans hospitals. Veterans hospitals don't order drugs directly from manufacturers or wholesalers. They are purchased under a depot contracting system, and then the healthcare providers get the drugs from the depot. So that parallel provision does not reflect Congress's intent not to have contract pharmacies under the 340B program. Furthermore, in enacting Act 1103, the Arkansas General Assembly recognized that numerous drug companies when Act 1103 was enacted, Representative Michelle Gray emphasized that nowhere in the Act are we setting a price, and pharma's own lobbyist acknowledged that the effect was to require manufacturers to ship drugs. Again, it's a distribution statute.
So this is Judge Smith. Is there anything in the record to indicate what effect having multiple contract entities would produce in terms of cost for the drug companies?
Well, more contract pharmacies mean that covered entities are able to provide more low-cost drugs to their patients, and so clearly it results in more costs to drug companies. But it's important to consider that contract pharmacy arrangements are not the only factor resulting in the increase in 340B utilization. For one thing, there are more drugs prescribed now than there were before. The number of new drug applications approved was 60% greater between 2010 and 2019 than previously. And in addition, Congress in 2010 added five categories of 340B hospitals. So there are more 340B covered entities. So it's inaccurate to single out contract pharmacies as being the sole driver of increased utilization. And regardless, Congress's intent was to enable covered entities to provide more services and to provide discounts to patients. Contract pharmacies enable covered entities to do that by prescribing prescriptions and enabling patients to pick up the prescriptions where they reside. And that's particularly important in rural states like Arkansas, where many people live in rural areas and many healthcare providers are in rural areas. And so in order for patients to get their drugs, they have to go to their neighborhood drugstore.
But could you describe the regulatory authority that the Arkansas Act gives to the Arkansas Insurance Department?
I'm sorry, Judge Smith, could you repeat the question?
Would you describe what regulatory authority or enforcement authority that the Arkansas Act gives to the Arkansas Insurance Department?
Judge Smith, if I may, I would like to leave that to Mr. Rand. My eight minutes have long passed, and if I may, I would like Mr. Rand to address that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Rand?
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Booth Rand. I'm General Counsel of the Arkansas Insurance Department. I am here representing the appellee, Alan McLean, in his official capacity as Insurance Commissioner. Judge Smith, the answer to your question is under Act 1103, which is codified in 2392, 604, 601 at SEC. The last provision in the Act requires that the insurance department or insurance commissioner shall issue rules to implement this legislation. So that is the authority that we have to regulate this area.
Have rules been implemented?
Yes.
Or rules been promulgated?
Yes, Your Honor, they have. We have implemented and promulgated Rule 123 in September of 2022. And in that rule, we defined various terms in Act 1103. In this briefing and under review by this court, the issue of whether or not this law is a pricing law or whether it's an acquisition and delivery law, which one is it, which type is it, we clarified in Rule 123 that the phrase drug pricing program refers to the acquisition and delivery of 340B medications. It is not a pricing law, as the appellant tries to argue. So Judge Smith, one of the things that we tried to accomplish in the rule that we did implement was to make it clear that it was not a pricing law, it was a distribution law.
You know, and I get that, except I'm just not very smart, obviously, and I'm pretty confused because I keep looking at this thing and I'd say, okay, now Arkansas allows anyone to be a contract pharmacy for profit, no matter how large, if they have any kind of a presence, no matter how small in Arkansas, and then they can order drugs and they're shipped all over the place, not in Arkansas, yet Arkansas is making some claim that they have the ability to regulate them because they have some small presence in Arkansas. And as I read what was written, and maybe I just don't read very well, but it looked to me like Arkansas is asserting the right to regulate everybody under the Arkansas rules if they have any presence in Arkansas, no matter how small. So I fill two prescriptions in Arkansas, and I can get, like, God only knows how many of these drugs in North Dakota, and you will purport to be able to regulate what's happening in North Dakota. And that seems to me to directly affect pricing.
Well, Your Honor, that one of the issues that was raised by the appellant was a Commerce Clause claim under the Dormant Commerce Clause. That the proceedings below were bifurcated to consider the commerce claim after the preemption claim was decided. I disagree that there is a Dormant Commerce Clause claim, but your issues were reflected in that particular argument.
Got it. Okay.
I would like to address the conflict issue. You know, as the case law is quite clear, under federal law, under conflict preemption arises when a party's compliance with state and federal law is a physical impossibility or poses an obstacle to the implementation of national standards. And under that particular case law, we do not believe that any of that is offended or invalidated. If the court looks at all of the functions in the 340B legislation, which is codified in 42-256B-A1, et cetera, there is provisions related to licensing and registration. There's provisions related to arbitration and ADR. There's provisions about how the ceiling prices are calculated. There's provisions related to whether or not covered entities can divert or illegally transfer these discounts to non-patients. There's provisions related to audits. In none of those provisions or functions does Act 1103 interfere or collide with or making it an impossibility for them to perform at the same time. We're not interfering.
Counsel, this is Judge Smith. How many other states have a similar statute?
Judge Smith, right now, the only one that I'm aware of that has been promulgated is Louisiana. But the appellant may correct me when he gets up. But I think that's the only other state.
So, conceptually, let's say 40 states enact similar statutes with differing regulations. Why wouldn't that pose a potential barrier or a potential hindrance to the national purposes of the Act?
That's a good question.
Of the federal Act.
Yes, Your Honor, that's a good question. And as I indicated in my brief, I tried to respond to that question. We believe that issue is for Congress. And if Congress believes that states should perform no roles, even states that are issuing different forms of the laws should perform no function in 340B, they need to put that in the legislation. They have not said states cannot get involved in this particular field related to distribution or delivery. So the answer to that question is, to me, a congressional decision, not a judicial one. And one of the things I do want to emphasize is that you can do ADR. A drug manufacturer can do ADR or arbitration without having interference from Act 1103. You can do a calculation of the ceiling price minus the discount without anything coming from Act 1103 interfering with that calculation. You can do registration under HRSA. You can do all of those functions and federal functions without getting any interference from Act 1103. We simply believe, and the other thing I do want to indicate, I do agree with Mr. Perry that the Arkansas Insurance Department is now enforcing Act 1103. We have not fully enforced it. It is now just starting to be enforced. So a lot of these questions about conflicts are suppositional. They're theoretical, they're hypothetical, that are being raised by Mr. Perry. I do not know and do not have an actual realistic barometer to know where in every area of enforcement there is a conflict, because we're just now doing enforcement.
What kind of complaints are being filed?
The complaints being filed, Your Honor, are complaints from centers, clinics, and hospitals complaining about single-site pharmacy restrictions. In other words, a drug manufacturer has told a covering entity they will only recognize your use of one contract pharmacy, no more than one.
Well, never mind.
That is all I have, and if you have any other questions, I'll be glad to answer.
I just want one question. There's nothing in the Act that requires a hospital or a covered entity to contract with a particular pharmacy. Is that right?
That is correct.
So if a covered entity wanted to limit it to one, two, three, or four, that's within their discretion.
That is correct.
And it creates no entitlement to pharmacies for contract rights.
That is correct. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Your Honor, there is indeed a potential patchwork of these state measures being proliferated right now. Arkansas, Louisiana, there's probably a half dozen active efforts at the moment. So the very risk that the Supreme Court addressed in Astra is playing out now. The shall offer provision makes the question of the scope of your offer, including to whom you have to deliver, a question of federal law. Shall offer is in A1 of the federal statute. The state statute says verbatim that a pharmaceutical manufacturer shall not deny or prohibit 340B drug pricing for an Arkansas-based community pharmacy, and then describes who that is. Now, the agency has tried through its regulations to redefine that term to mean something slightly different. I don't know that it matters, because you can't separate distribution from pricing. But under the Myers case, which is in our brief, decided by the Arkansas Supreme Court, you do not defer to a state agency's effort to redefine terms in a statute. You read the statute the way it's written. In the appendix...
This is Judge Smith. Would you expound on the statement that you can't separate price and distribution?
Yeah, Judge Smith, there is a handy analogy in our briefs, and that is you cannot indirectly require what you can't require directly. So they can't require us to sell a $1 car in Arkansas, and they can't require us to deliver a $1 car to somebody in Arkansas. You can't separate those two things. They're the same thing. And frankly, all of these issues are addressed by the federal program. As Astra described, Astra was not simply only about a pricing issue. Pricing was part of that particular case. Pricing was an example the Supreme Court gave. It was about the body of third-party beneficiary claims that might be brought under a federal contract.
But isn't at the end of the day, what this case is really about is that who gets to set the number? The drug, you know, I quoted from the Third Circuit, one of the drug manufacturers says, at our discretion, we can set whatever number we want. That's what it said. Let me finish. And what the contracting entities are saying is, we want to be able to set that number. We may set it at 1, we may set it at 10, we may set it at 20. Isn't it really come down to who decides that issue?
And the federal government does. Subject to the federal mechanisms for resolving that issue in the statute, with review under the Administrative Procedure Act in federal court. That is what the Third Circuit case is about. That's what the D.C. District Court case is about. And that is indeed what is being litigated in the Seventh Circuit now. The question is, did the federal agency make the right choice on that specific question? It's uniquely an issue of federal law, and the federal government gets to decide it. One more thing, if I might. The appellate appendix at pages 450 to 454 contains the proposed rules that Mr. Rand put out for this program in Arkansas. He said he doesn't know what's going to happen with these threshold federal issues when he starts hearing these cases. I can guarantee you those will be real issues. But the proposed rule, which at 460 to 461 he describes why he didn't promulgate, says that you have to go through the federal mechanism first on these on these particular issues. At 454 in particular, you can look at the enforcement provisions in that proposed rule. They know that this is a uniquely federal program, and these questions have to be decided by the federal agency, and what they're trying to do is enlarge the program by threatening, in the way 1103 does, adjudication inconsistent with the federal program. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement. It's a very interesting case. It's been well briefed and well argued. You will hear from us shortly. So, thank you.